freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, buy a Coke, buy a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
The other side of the news.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit. Flim flam diagram, data jam, handicap, caught it. Yo, you bought it. A mine is a profitable thing. Till freedom is a rumor.
It's a great golden day. Getting better by the minute. Makes you glad you're living in it. What a great happy time. It's a day that's made for sitting on a sea of friends. It's a day for drinking cold glass and with friends.
It's great golden day.
We're in studio today with Professor George Sorger, and I'll let you tell the audience what your department is and what your interests are, George.
Okay, my department is biology, and I'm interested, of course, in my topics in biology and medicinal plants, in fact, some of them. And I love the teaching there. I love the department, but I'm also interested in social action. And that's, I guess, what we're going to be talking about today, because in my department, like in the rest of the university, Coca-Cola has an exclusive contract, so that's all you see is Coke machines. And that's something that I particularly object to.
You're involved in a lot of local activities. I've seen you at various other places, and that to do with Stack Watch, I believe, and testing the water of Lake Ontario. But this Coke idea, how long has it been like this, a couple of years?
Well, the history with Coke goes back a long ways, I'm afraid. I first became interested in it because one of the trade unionists from Guatemala came up here and became our friend. Miguel Cifuentes is his name. And he told us about Coke's behavior with their workers there. This was way back in the late 70s, beginning 80s. And he came up in the 80s. And they had murdered some of their workers down there.
No kidding. What was that? Whereabouts was that Coke plant? And was it making only Coca-Cola, or was it making other things?
This was a soft drinks bottling plant, and it was a Coke operation. I don't know all of the products that it made, but one of the things it made, of course, was Coke. And the trade unions there were having a very, very hard time with some companies, and Coke was one of the worst.
What were the problems? Not enough wages, or were they stealing the community's water supply? Or?
No, it was trade union issues and dismissing workers and changing things so that workers didn't have their jobs or their pensions or their wages and things like that. It's been a long time, so I don't recall the particulars there, but lately I went to Colombia, and I was aware that Coke had a bad record in Colombia, but then I met some of the people that they have been abusing, and so that brought this into a different kind of perspective.
Whereabouts in Colombia did you go, George?
We were representing Canada. Two of us in Colombia as guests of an international delegation invited by the Trade Union Council, the CUT, which is the equivalent of the CLC down there. And I stayed at the headquarters of the workers that, or the union that represents most of the Coca-Cola workers, which is called Sinal Trainal, in Bogota. And from there we went to a couple of other places, to Barranca Bermeja, which is a town where an awful lot of murders are going on right now.
Over what reason?
They have to do with trade unionists and paramilitaries. And I also went to Bucaramanga, which is a pretty hot town for the same reason. As you probably are aware, Maggie, Colombia is the champion in trade union murders in the world. And it's not just the champion, it's the champion by far. More than 80% of all the trade unionists murdered in the last 5 or 6 years have been murdered in Colombia. And there's a reason for that. Colombia is undergoing a big modification. It is essentially adjusting involuntarily for most people into a perfectly globalized country. And what makes that possible is, or makes it acceptable or palatable to certain people, is the continuation of a civil war. The civil war started in the 60s. And the way that it started is sort of very much like what is going on now. There's tremendous violence between the liberals and the conservatives. And the way that they settled this was to eventually share power in the government. And then they essentially disappeared as different parties, and they became the same party pretty much in their policies. And what they did was just to represent the wealthy and the landowners and the industrialists in the country. And what happened is that to avoid the violence before this agreement occurred, a whole bunch of peasants tried to flee into an area where they declared, okay, this is a no-war zone. We don't want to participate in any of this violence. The place was called Marquetalia. And the government went after them, and they massacred a whole lot of these peasants. The survivors of these peasants became the FARC, that is the guerrilla force that is fighting the government now. And what they wanted, and what they wanted after that, was to change Colombia so that peasants could have land and so that wealth and power distribution was better. That war has been going on since the 60s. And essentially, the government has really defeated them militarily. Not completely, but you know they can't hope to win the war, the FARC, and the government does not want the war to end. Now you might ask why, and you might ask, well, what is the evidence for that? The first bit of evidence for that is that the biggest guerrilla force was not the FARC before; it was the M19, again formed in the 60s and 70s, and the government offered them peace, and they negotiated. And they said, you can go into the political process. And as soon as they did that, they started murdering their candidates. Then there was a repeat performance with FARC. FARC was agreed to a ceasefire and that they would participate in the political process without violence. They formed the party called Unión Patriótica. And then all of the candidates for the election were murdered. So this is, it's not a genuine offer for peace. They want to exterminate all the people that are in the way. And in the process, in the 60s, the United States Southern Command, which had advisors in Colombia, said, listen, the army is not going to be able to take care of the guerrillas. You need to form what has become known as paramilitaries, or what they call in Colombia, Autodefensas Unidas, which is self-defense, United Self-Defense Forces. And these paramilitaries are now the way that the government gets rid of people that they don't want in their way, because the army can't legally do it, they can't judicially do it, because these people are not committing any crimes. On the contrary, they're defending democracy in the country, so to get rid of them, they need the paramilitaries. And to justify the paramilitaries, they have to keep the war going until they've got rid of all of the people in their way. And while I was there, I interviewed the American ambassador, together with a couple of American delegates that were with us. Mr. William Wood is his name. He's a very bright guy, and I think he believes what he's saying. And he told us, look, we know very well that there are huge and massive violations of human rights in this country, but the president is doing all he can, Mr. Uribe, in order to get globalization here, because globalization is going to solve all of the problems, because then people will be rich and they won't have to kill each other anymore. Anyway, the Coca-Cola situation is not unique. There are other companies that are doing the same kind of thing, mining companies, oil pipelines, and so on. And what they want to do is to have transnational companies have a completely free hand. So who's in the way? In the way of mining explorations, particularly for natural gas and oil, because Colombia is one of the richest countries in the world for oil. It is the third in Latin America, actually, exporter. A lot of these areas that have oil underneath them or natural gas are in regions where you have native peoples, indigenous communities. So what the paramilitaries do is they come in and they literally massacre people. We had a chance to interview a couple of people from the Wiwa Nation. That's near the border with Venezuela. And they said that the paramilitaries came in, they shot a bunch of people, they desecrated their symbols, and they swaggered in and out of their community again and again. And the army had a base just 5 kilometers from there. And the government keeps saying that they don't know about this. This is ridiculous. It is very well established that the army and the paramilitaries are united, in that the army supplies the paramilitaries with a lot of their weapons and stuff. So displacement is the way to get rid of people who are just in the way, doing things that are not going to be globalized. On the other hand, you have in the cities, you have trade unions, right? Things like Coca-Cola or the oil workers and that sort of thing. And in Barranca Bermeja was where I went, was the perfect example of what happens. The oil workers, all of them were fired because it was a state-owned company. There's a government owned it, and they wanted to privatize it to multinationals. And so they were going to rehire people, but not as union members, but and this is interesting because of the vocabulary used, cooperatives and other kinds of unions and individuals. And what that means is a cooperative sounds really nice. But what that is just a group of guys, all right, that have to compete with other little groups of guys that take the job and the responsibility for doing the job and the risks. And so that lets the company off the hook. And what I saw when I went into Barranca Bermeja was a big angry crowd in front of the union office. And they were all shouting and arguing with each other. And this didn't seem like a union situation at all. And it's because instead of being united in a union, the company puts them in competition and pitting them one against the other, right?
Fragmentation.
Exactly. And one of the unions there was Coke. Coke bottling company was represented by a union. And they were all, the entire executive had been fired, and they were all threatened with death. And one of them in particular, William Mendoza, had his little girl there who was about 6 now. And they tried to kidnap her, the paramilitaries, and they kept threatening him, you better leave town, and mentioning, you know, the Coca-Cola quite directly. So the way to get rid of the trade unions, which are in the way of globalization, privatization, etc., is to murder the executives of the trade unions, who are most of the trade unions that are murdered are executives. And human rights workers, lawyers, cooperatives, anybody that is involved in that sort of thing, yeah.
What about any media coverage or any kind of news of this getting outside of the area?
Well, unfortunately, the media more and more is becoming part of the problem, in that they're less and less independent. And the most egregious example of that is in Venezuela, but even in Colombia, I mean, the media keep drumming this thing about the war. And the paramilitaries are terrorists, of course, and they're not under the control of the government and this and that and the other. But then, you know, there's ample evidence from Amnesty International and other very respectable organizations that there's a very strong link between the two. But Maggie, you wanted to talk about Coke, so let me do
that.
Well,
we are talking about Coke. We're just doing it a little longer than I thought. But yeah, there is, I mean, if it wasn't Coke, it would probably be another. But Coke is the prime example because they're, from my interest and my reading, it's the water there, you know.
Well, the water is a problem mainly in places like India. But in Colombia, it's not the water. It's what they do with the trade unionists. Since 1990, Coke has murdered 8 of their trade unionists, and I will tell you just about one of them. Isidro Segundo Gil. He was elected in 95, I believe it was. He was elected to the executive of Sinal Trainal, which is the union that, represents most of the coke workers in a town called Carepa. And they had already murdered 2 trade unionists in there before, paramilitaries had. And they began negotiations on a tricky business because the coke wanted to get rid of some of the workers because they wanted to restructure the place. Essentially, they wanted to get rid of the union. And shortly after he was elected to the negotiating committee of Sinal Trainal, they brought in a new manager, a guy called Mosquera. And Mosquera boasted that he was going to get rid of the union of Sinal Trainal. And quickly, they hired some paramilitaries who became quite prominent in there. And since that time then, the paramilitaries would be coming in and out and conferring with this Mosquera. And you can't get into that plant without permission, you know. I mean, it's not like walking into a house with a key, right? You have to go through with a pass and all the rest of it. So anyway, in December of 1996, early December, Hill was walking into the plant, and he was met there by 2 paramilitaries that walked in with him and shot him in front of people.
Witnesses.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, these same 2 paramilitaries went and they set fire to the trade union hall of Sinal Trainal. And then 2 days later, they came back to the plant, not just these 2, but others as well. And they assembled all of the workers. There were at least 200 or 300 and said, if you don't resign from the union, you're all going to have the same fate of Mr. Hill. And so all of them agreed to resign, and by, quotes, coincidence, their resignation forms were already in the office. And then the Sinal Trainal Union disappeared from Carepa, and their wages of the people that they rehired were less than half of what they were before. Now, interestingly enough, you know, Coke denies that this had anything to do with them.
How can they deny that? What excuses have you seen from Coke?
Well, there was an interesting trial in Atlanta under the Alien Tort Law, which is it was a law of the United States to catch pirates. And essentially what it deals with is it allows people who have been aggrieved by United States individuals or groups to sue them in the United States. And so Sinal Trainal brought this case of Isidro Hill to trial in South Florida, which is, I think, probably an unfortunate place to do it. But anyway, that's what they did. And there was not really much dispute about the events happening, but what they did dispute was that Coke had any control over its bottling plant. And the way that they did this was they presented a paper that was not even about the agreement between Coca-Cola and that particular bottling plant. It was a general agreement, and I don't even know where it was from. Coke said, well, you see, our agreement doesn't cover labor practices. But Coke owns 40% of the shares in their bottling plants down there, and they control everything else, so why shouldn't they control the labor practices? I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous that they can't control it. If they wanted to, they could definitely, you know, make a point of, listen, we don't want to have any of this stuff going on. But they do. The other thing that they brought up at the trial was the question of the paramilitaries and the government, because they wanted to show that the reason that the government had not taken any action on this is that there is collusion between the government and the paramilitaries, which, as I said, has been heavily documented. In fact, there's even been a trial within Colombia of one of the generals that was discovered as being a kingpin in the relationship there, that because of so much publicity from people who the government of Colombia had to reluctantly accept, pointed out this, and they themselves had to admit it. So the fact that the Colombian authorities have done nothing about this and have not acknowledged Koch's crime is not at all surprising. I mean, it's their own war dogs that are doing this, right? So why should they go after them? And I had an experience with the Ministry of Labor there. We went to visit them, and we met the second in command, and this lady was a former lawyer for Nestle. Now, Nestle is another company that has been murdering their workers, and to put a lawyer that was on the other side like that now in charge of protection of workers seems like ridiculous. And what she said was, look, we have this, she actually didn't say that, she brought in another lady who was in charge of human rights, very elegant lady. It was all bizarre because it's all so polite. Over sips of coffee there that was provided by the Colombian government for us, though they knew we hated their guts and they hated ours. But in any case, what she said was, look, you know, you have all these complaints, and because they haven't gone on after any of these paramilitaries that have murdered trade unionists, have all these complaints, but you see, we try to do our work carefully and seriously, and we have this long list, so it takes us time to go after it. So they have no interest whatsoever in going after these things, and it's therefore not surprising that the Colombian government, which should be the first line of, grievance, you might say, has not done anything about this.
It looks obviously like a lot of areas nowadays in the world is that the corporations are in bed with the politicians to the benefit of both.
Yes, you could look at it that way. I look at it a little differently. What I see is that there is a program in Colombia to globalize the country, which means privatizing. It means essentially there's no such thing as national sovereignty when it comes to the economy. And that a lot of people suffer from that. And the people who are pushing it forward, I think they generally believe that this is the way to go. I mean,
now, though, after Enron has been exposed and...
Yeah, I don't think if you're an ideologue when it comes to that sort of thing that anything will faze you. If it hasn't worked, it's because of some little glitch. It's not because the idea is wrong. So that's the way they go about it. And, of course, those of us who see the damage done by this have to be opposed to it. And one of the reasons that we're trying to get McMaster to offer choice, at least, is to get Coca-Cola to realize, the only way that I think you can speak to a corporation like that, that it isn't profitable to continue getting away with murder, because you won't get away with it. You're going to lose some of your customers by doing that. And unfortunately, when you have an exclusive contract, you can't lose your customers because they have nowhere else to turn. And I can tell you, when you're working late at night and you want a little snack, you don't want to have to go off campus in order to buy it, because the only kind of thing you can find on campus is Coke. So there's no reason why people should have to make that sacrifice in order to have a choice here. And the choice, I think, is not really so much the taste and that sort of thing, because, I mean, I don't see that much difference between one soft drink and another, but it is a question of moral choice. Those people who feel that, you know, we shouldn't be supporting a company like that, as I said, shouldn't have to be penalized for that.
What is McMaster doing in the way of campaigns to try and educate the students in the community about what Coke is all about in Colombia and other places in the world?
Well, I was very happy to see a couple of students. They have formed a group called Campus Choice. Michelle and Adam, who I hope you will interview soon. And there's another group of students that are associated with them, but they sort of spearheaded it. And they work really night and day to find out what the situation is here on campus, who the contract was signed by, and who knows about the exclusive contract and so on. And they sent a petition around campus, and they immediately got hundreds of signatures. There is interest in the choice aspect, and I think it is also for moral reasons. They've allowed me to speak to a rally here about Coke and Columbia, and they're aware of the atrocities they've committed there, as well as the problems in India, which have to do more with the water that you were talking about. But what we have done is we've spoken to the Faculty Association about this exclusive contract, and they were very favorable, at least the executive. And we spoke to the McMaster Student Union president, incoming president, and he listened to us with great interest.
What would be the reason the McMaster would sign a contract? I know it was a financial incentive, but what would make them do that?
Well, we can't tell you much in the way of details of this because, interestingly enough, that contract which was signed in the name of McMaster is secret. You can't see it. So all we know about it is stuff that we are told by one of the people who did sign it, which is Mr. Roger Troll in charge of development. And there's not only can't we see it, but there's an interesting clause in there. The contract was made for 10 years, and if we don't sell enough coke, it extends for another 2 years, again, without anybody being able to see it. Now, what are the incentives for this? When I spoke to Mr. Trill, he said, look, there was 90% of the soft drinks sold on campus were already coke, and we would get no benefit from it. So by having an exclusive contract, they will give us some money for different activities, particularly student activities, such as scholarships or something. I really don't know what they do because, as I said, we can't see the contract, and I think that's amazing.
So it's another privatization of the educational...
Well, I think it just runs completely counter to what a university should be
exactly.
All about.
All right, so our conquest here then is to inform and educate. And do you have any websites or names or places or things that people can pinpoint onto to do some more research on their own?
Yeah, sure. There's killercoke.org. That's a simple thing to remember, I think. And if you go in there, you'll get a pretty good picture of the campaign to get rid of coke. And if you go into try to look up Coca-Cola, you'll get their version of things. And if you go to Sinaltrainal, which is Sinaltrainal, Sinaltrainal, if you look into that, you'll find their version of things, although a lot of it is in Spanish.
You can get translated, though, through the computer. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for coming in today, George, and we're going to have you back because I think we're going to follow this story because it's just indicative of transnationals and globalized privatization of countries. I was going to say companies, but now it's countries. And what I want to do is show how they affect us here right in Hamilton, what's affecting us right here on our streets with these globalized deals.
Well, we'll have some action here for sure in the fall because... Campus Choice is not going away, and I'm not going to be leaving either.
So. Okay, well, good luck. We'll talk to you again, George. Thanks.
Okay, Maggie.
And that was Professor George Sorger from McMaster University. If you want more information on the Coca-Cola campaigns that are going on around the university, contact George Sorger at his extension in the biology department. See you next week.
It's a great golden day. Golden day.
kitchen having a golden day with Coke.
Redefining radio.
Snap up radio.